Chapter 43. Amazing Artfulness of Captain Cuttle, and a New Pursuit for Walter Gay. Walter could not, for several days, decide what to do in the Barbados business, and even cherished some faint hope that Mr. Dombey might not have meant what he had said, or that he might change his mind, and tell him he was not to go. But as nothing occurred to give this idea, which was sufficiently improbable in itself, any touch of confirmation, and as time was slipping by, and he had none to lose, he felt that he must act, without hesitating any longer. Walter's chief difficulty was, how to break the change in his affairs to Uncle Sol, to whom he was sensible it would be a terrible blow. He had the greater difficulty in dashing Uncle Sol's spirits with such an astounding piece of intelligence, because they had lately recovered very much, and the old man had become so cheerful, that the little back parlor was itself again. Uncle Sol had paid the first appointed portion of the debt to Mr. Dombey, and was hopeful of working his way through the rest, and to cast him down afresh, when he had sprung up so manfully from his troubles, was a very distressing necessity. Yet it would never do to run away from him. He must know of it beforehand, and how to tell him was the point. As to the question of going or not going, Walter did not consider that he had any power of choice in the matter. Mr. Dombey had truly told him that he was young, and that his uncle's circumstances were not good, and Mr. Dombey had plainly expressed, in the glance with which he had accompanied that reminder, that if he declined to go he might stay at home if he chose, but not in his counting house. His uncle and he lay under a great obligation to Mr. Dombey, which was of Walter's own soliciting. He might have begun in secret to despair of ever winning that gentleman's favor, and might have thought that he was now and then disposed to put a slight upon him, which was hardly just. But what would have been duty without that, was still duty with it, or Walter thought so, and duty must be done. When Mr. Dombey had looked at him, and told him he was young, and that his uncle's circumstances were not good, there had been an expression of disdain in his face, a contemptuous and disparaging assumption, that he would be quite content to live idly on a reduced old man, which stung the boy's generous soul. Determined to assure Mr. Dombey, in so far as it was possible to give him the assurance without expressing it in words, that indeed he mistook his nature, Walter had been anxious to show even more cheerfulness and activity after the West Indian interview than he had shown before, if that were possible, in one of his quick and zealous disposition. He was too young and inexperienced to think that possibly this very quality in him was not agreeable to Mr. Dombey, and that it was no stepping stone to his good opinion to be elastic and hopeful of pleasing under the shadow of his powerful displeasure, whether it were right or wrong. But it may have been that the great man thought himself defied in this new exposition of an honest spirit, and purposed to bring it down. Well, at last and at least, Uncle Sol must be told, apostrophe thought Walter, with a sigh. And as Walter was apprehensive that his voice might perhaps quaver a little, and that his countenance might not be quite as hopeful as he could wish it to be, if he told the old man himself, and saw the first effects of his communication on his wrinkled face, he resolved to avail himself of the services of that powerful mediator, Captain Cuttle. Sunday coming round, he set off therefore, after breakfast, once more to beat up Captain Cuttle's quarters. It was not unpleasant to remember, on the way thither, that Mrs. McStinger resorted to a great distance every Sunday morning, to attend the ministry of the Reverend Melchizedek Howler, who, having been one day discharged from the West India docks on a false suspicion, got up expressly against him by the general enemy, of screwing gimlets into puncheons, and applying his lips to the orifice, had announced the destruction of the world for, that day 2 years, at 10 in the morning, and opened a front parlor for the reception of ladies and gentlemen of the ranting persuasion, upon whom, on the first occasion of their assemblage, the admonitions of the Reverend Melchizedek had produced so powerful an effect that, in their rapturous performance of a sacred jig, which closed the service, the whole flock broke through into a kitchen below and disabled a mangle belonging to one of the fold. This the captain, in a moment of uncommon conviviality, had confided to Walter and his uncle, between the repetitions of Lovely Peg, on the night when Broglie the broker was paid out. The captain himself was punctual in his attendance at a church in his own neighborhood, which hoisted the Union Jack every Sunday morning, and where he was good enough the lawful beadle being infirm to keep an eye upon the boys, over whom he exercised great power, in virtue of his mysterious hook. Knowing the regularity of the captain's habits, Walter made all the haste he could, that he might anticipate his going out, and he made such good speed, that he had the pleasure, on turning into Brig Plus, to behold the broad blue coat and waistcoat hanging out of the captain's open window, to air in the sun. It appeared incredible that the coat and waistcoat could be seen by mortal eyes without the captain, but he certainly was not in them, otherwise his legs, the houses in Brig Plus not being lofty, would have obstructed the street door, which was perfectly clear. Quite wondering at this discovery, Walter gave a single knock. Stinger, apostrophe, he distinctly heard the captain say, up in his room, as if that were no business of his. Therefore Walter gave two knocks. Cuddle, apostrophe, he heard the captain say upon that, and immediately afterwards the captain, in his clean shirt and braces, with his neckerchief hanging loosely round his throat like a coil of rope, and his glazed hat on, appeared at the window, leaning out over the broad blue coat and waistcoat. Waller, apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the captain, looking down upon him in amazement. Captain Cuddle, apostrophe, returned Walter, only me, what's the matter, my lad? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the captain, with great concern. Gills and pin, and sprung nothing again? Apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe, said Walter. My uncle's all right, Captain Cuddle. Apostrophe, the captain expressed his gratification, and said he would come down below and open the door, which he did. So you're early, Waller, apostrophe, said the captain, eyeing him still doubtfully, when they got upstairs. Why, the fact is, Captain Cuddle, apostrophe, said Walter, sitting down, I was afraid you would have gone out, and I want to benefit by your friendly counsel. Apostrophe, so you shall, apostrophe, said the captain, what'll you take? Apostrophe, I want to take your opinion, Captain Cuddle, apostrophe, returned Walter, smiling. That's the only thing for me. Apostrophe, come on then, apostrophe, said the captain. With a will, my lad. Apostrophe, Walter related to him what had happened, and the difficulty in which he felt respecting his uncle, and the relief it would be to him if Captain Cuddle, in his kindness, would help him to smooth it away. Captain Cuddle's infinite consternation and astonishment at the prospect unfolded to him, gradually swallowing that gentleman up, until it left his face quite vacant, and the suit of blue, the glazed hat, and the hook, apparently without an owner. You see, Captain Cuddle, apostrophe, pursued Walter, for myself, I am young, as Mr. Dombey said, and not to be considered. I am to fight my way through the world, I know, but there are two points I was thinking, as I came along, that I should be very particular about, in respect to my uncle. I don't mean to say, that I deserve to be the pride, and delight of his life, you believe me, I know, but I am. Now, don't you think I am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the captain seemed to make an endeavor, to rise from the depths of his astonishment, and get back to his face. But the effort being ineffectual, the glazed hat merely nodded with a mute, unutterable meaning. If I live, and have my health, apostrophe, said Walter, and I am not afraid of that, still, when I leave England I can hardly hope to see my uncle again. He is old, Captain Cuddle, and besides, his life is a life of custom, apostrophe, steady, Waller. Of a want of custom? apostrophe said the captain, suddenly reappearing. Too true, apostrophe returned Walter, shaking his head. But I meant a life of habit, Captain Cuttle, that sort of custom. And if,
as you very truly said, I am sure,
he would have died the sooner for the loss of the stock, and all those objects to which he has been accustomed for so many years, don't you think he might die a little sooner for the loss of apostrophe, of his navy, apostrophe interposed the captain. Right. Apostrophe, well then, apostrophe said Walter, trying to speak gaily, we must do our best to make him believe that the separation is but a temporary one, after all. But as I know better, or dread that I know better, Captain Cuttle, and as I have so many reasons for regarding him with affection, and duty, and honor, I am afraid I should make but a very poor hand at that, if I tried to persuade him of it. That's my great reason for wishing you to break it out to him, and that's the first point. Apostrophe, keep her off a point or so. Apostrophe, apostrophe, observed the captain, in a contemplative voice. What did you say, Captain Cuttle? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Walter. Stand by. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the captain, thoughtfully. Walter paused to ascertain if the captain had any particular information to add to this, but as he said no more, went on. Now, the second point, Captain Cuttle. I am sorry to say, I am not a favorite with Mr. Dombey. I have always tried to do my best, and I have always done it, but he does not like me. He can't help his likings and dislikings, perhaps. I say nothing of that. I only say that I am certain he does not like me. He does not send me to this post as a good one. He disclaims to represent it as being better than it is, and I doubt very much if it will ever lead me to advancement in the house, whether it does not, on the contrary, dispose of me forever and put me out of the way. Now, we must say nothing of this to my uncle, Captain Cuttle, but must make it out to be as favorable and promising as we can, and when I tell you what it really is, I only do so, that in case any means should ever arise of lending me a hand, so far off, I may have one friend at home who knows my real situation. Waller, my boy, apostrophe replied the captain, in the Proverbs of Solomon you will find the following words, may we never want a friend in need, nor a bottle to give him. When found, make a note of. Apostrophe, here the captain stretched out his hand to Walter, with an air of downright good faith that spoke volumes, at the same time repeating, for he felt proud of the accuracy and pointed application of his quotation, when found, make a note of. Apostrophe, Captain Cuttle, apostrophe said Walter, taking the immense fist extended to him by the captain in both his hands, which it completely filled, next to my uncle's soul, I love you. There is no one on earth, in whom I can more safely trust, I am sure. As to the mere going away, Captain Cuttle, I don't care for that. Why should I care for that? If I were free to seek my own fortune, if I were free to go as a common sailor, if I were free to venture on my own account to the farthest end of the world, I would gladly go. I would have gladly gone, years ago, and taken my chance of what might come of it. But it was against my uncle's wishes, and against the plans he had formed for me, and there was an end of that. But what I feel, Captain Cuttle, is that we have been a little mistaken all along, and that, so far as any improvement in my prospects is concerned, I am no better off now than I was when I first entered Dombey's house, perhaps a little worse, for the house may have been kindly inclined towards me then, and it certainly is not now. Apostrophe, turn again, Whittington, apostrophe muttered the disconsolate captain, after looking at Walter for some time. Apostrophe replied Walter, laughing, and turn a great many times to, Captain Cuttle, I'm afraid, before such fortune as his ever turns up again. Not that I complain, apostrophe he added, in his lively, animated, energetic way. I have nothing to complain of. I am provided for. I can live. When I leave my uncle, I leave him to you, and
and I can leave him to no one better, Captain Cuttle. I haven't told you all this because I despair, not I. It's to convince you that I can't pick and choose in Domini's house, and that where I am sent, there I must go, and what I am offered, that I must take. It's better for my uncle that I should be sent away, for Mr. Domini is a valuable friend to him, as he proved himself, you know when, Captain Cuttle, and I am persuaded he won't be less valuable when he hasn't me there every day to awaken his dislike. So hurrah for the West Indies, Captain Cuttle. How does that tune go that the sailors sing? For the port of Barbados, boys. Cheerily. Leaving old England behind us, boys. Cheerily. Apostrophe apostrophe here the captain roared in chorus, oh cheerily, cheerily. Oh cheer I lie. Apostrophe apostrophe the last line reaching the quick ears of an ardent skipper not quite sober, who lodged opposite, and who instantly sprung out of bed, threw up his window, and joined in, across the street, at the top of his voice, produced a fine effect. When it was impossible to sustain the concluding note any longer, the skipper bellowed forth a terrific ahoy. Apostrophe apostrophe intended in part as a friendly greeting, and in part to show that he was not at all breathed. That done, he shut down his window and went to bed again. And now, Captain Cuttle, apostrophe said Walter, handing him the blue coat and waistcoat, and bustling very much, if he will come, and break the news to Uncle Sol which he ought to have known, days upon days ago, by rights, I'll leave you at the door, you know, and walk about until the afternoon. Apostrophe, the captain, however, scarcely appeared to relish the commission, or to be by any means confident of his powers of executing it. He had arranged the future life and adventures of Walter so very differently, and so entirely to his own satisfaction. He had felicitated himself so often on the sagacity and foresight displayed in that arrangement, and had found it so complete and perfect in all its parts, that to suffer it to go to pieces all at once, and even to assist in breaking it up, required a great effort of his resolution. The captain, too, found it difficult to unload his old ideas upon the subject, and to take a perfectly new cargo on board, with that rapidity which the circumstances required, or without jumbling and confounding the two. Consequently, instead of putting on his coat and waistcoat with anything like the impetuosity that could alone have kept pace with Walter's mood, he declined to invest himself with those garments at all at present, and informed Walter that on such a serious matter, he must be allowed to bite his nails a bit. It's an old habit of mine, Waller, apostrophe said the captain, any time he's 50 year. When you see Ned Cuttle bite his nails, Waller, then you may know that Ned Cuttle's aground. Apostrophe, thereupon the captain put his iron hook between his teeth, as if it... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.